Call to order this hearing of the State and Local Government Operations and Oversight Committee. Minutes from the preceding meeting have been distributed. Are there any corrections? Seeing none, Senator Lori moves adoption of the minutes. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The first bill we have before us is Senate File 2211. Senator Pogomiller.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I believe you had was it a joint hearing with the House? No, we just had a pre-hearing, didn't we, prior to session starting regarding...
It was just this committee.
Yes, and it was regarding this idea of redistricting reform. There was a commission... that Vice President Mondale, former Governors Anderson, Quie, Senate Majority Leader Roger Moe, Secretary of State Jerome Groh, and others were on, that is promoting the idea of having a outside commission do redistricting of the legislature every decade. And Senate File 2211 is based on the recommendations from this reform commission. And it is a bill that states that political competitiveness should be considered when drawing boundaries. It establishes a commission of 5 retired judges who have not served in party-endorsed positions to draw the boundaries, one appointed by the majority and minority leaders of the Senate, one by the minority leader of the House, and one by the Speaker of the House. And then those 4 judges would pick the 5th person to chair the meeting or to chair the group. They would design plans that would be placed before the legislature for approval or rejection. Assuming they were approved, that would be the end of it. If it was rejected, they would provide another plan. And then the last plan, if it was rejected, could be modified by the legislature. The first 2 plans that would be offered, if they were not accepted, would be up or down votes. The final plan that this panel adopted would be submitted to the state Supreme Court for a declaratory judgment that the plan is valid. That's an attempt to kind of short-circuit any legal action on the plan to avoid dilatory action in its implementation. And the commission would expire when legislative and congressional redistricting maps are enacted into law. After a plan is drafted and has met all of its court challenges, it's enacted by the legislature, physically enacted by the legislature, and then that's the final word on it. That's the basis of the bill. I have an amendment to kind of put it even in better shape. I believe the chair has an amendment or two. And maybe I should just at this point just take questions on the original base bill and then proceed with amendments.
Are there questions on the policy underlying the proposal before us? Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Pogomiller, I'm trying to figure out the political competitiveness of districts and the requirement that we try and make these districts more politically competitive. I'm wondering, in a district like yours, which is surrounded by districts that are not competitive, what would you envision? I mean, how would they draw lines to make your district politically competitive?
Senator Pogomiller.
Excellent question. And, you know, I must have given my copy of the bill to somebody, so.
You may have given it to me.
If I could just get a copy.
Page will give you a copy.
Senator Roebling, excellent question. And one of the amendments that I'm going to offer will help clarify this. There are a whole series of court and federally mandated ideas related to redistricting that need to be taken into account. Nesting of districts, House districts within Senate districts, equal population, continuity and compactness, minority representation. There's been a lot of court work around that. And an amendment I'm going to offer will list those boilerplate ideas that have to be dealt with. And then in that list will be this idea of political competitiveness, because it's just one balancing factor compared to all these others. And the way it's going to be, the way it will be
Senator
set up.
Senator Kogemiller, why don't we go ahead and adopt your, it's an author's amendment. And adopt it. And I think then we can better speak to it. Senator Larson moves adoption of the A3 amendment. This is an author's amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Okay,
Senator Kogemiller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Senator Roebling, the way this is structured is from top to bottom, you go through these criteria, and the highest up or equal nesting and equal population take the highest priority. You have to have nested districts, and they have to have equal population. We can get into that. Substantially equal in population has a meaning based on all the court decisions over the last 20 or 30 years. And for congressional districts, substantially equal basically means exactly equal to the number. Whereas for legislative districts, it roughly means 2% variation on either side. Do I have that right, Mr. Watson? 2% either side. And that's been based on all the court decisions related to redistricting. The bigger the districts, there's an irony here. The bigger the district, the easier it is actually to get the perfect population. The smaller district, the harder it gets. There's an irony to that, it seems like it shouldn't be that way, but that's actually the way it works. And the more districts you have, the harder it is to have equal population in every district. So that's why legislatures have been allowed this margin where they can just be within 2%. Maps that we've done in Minnesota have been within 1% of either side. The last three redistrictings, I think, all were within 1% high and low from the ideal number. So nesting and equal population are the first things you do. Then you do compactness and contiguity. Compactness means you kind of try to make them look like they're in one area so that they're not squiggly or look like dragons and things. Contiguity means that you can't have a part of the district here and then jump over an area and have a piece of district over here, except for with water. With water, that could act as something where you can have it on both sides of a lake, for example, or on both sides of a river. Numbering, then, is just the tradition in Minnesota has been to number legislative districts from the northwest corner across the state all the way down to the south. Congressional districts, the opposite. That must have been some arrangement made many years ago. So congressional districts start in the southeast corner and work their way up. That's why one is in the south. Minority representation, there have been the Voting Rights Act of the 1950s and as amended through the 60s, 70s, 80s basically says you cannot dilute the voting strength of a racial or language minority. It's a very sophisticated concept. There's a lot of court action around this. But the bottom line is, until you get a critical mass of either language or racial minority in one spot, any attempt to break that up is dilution. Once you get a critical mass, then it starts to be called packing, where you're putting too many minorities in one district, as an example. But there's a lot of legal court decisions around this issue, so it's fairly well understood now. Then the next criteria is political subdivisions. Try not to break up cities, counties, and towns if you can avoid it. And then the next is community, and this is in tiered order. So higher priority is always the one above it. And they balance against each other. So none of them are perfect. You're trying to balance them all. Then you have communities of interest. And that is an area that's a little bit less scientific, but social, political, cultural, ethnic, or economic interest. For example, you might not try to split up the Iron Range if you can avoid it, because there's been an economic interest there over the years. A cultural might be that you don't create a lot of districts around the second-tier suburbs to put a lot of farmers in with a lot of suburbanites. If you do too much of that, that might appear to be too much fracturing of kind of culturally cohesive groups. Again, that one is a little more in the eyes of the beholder, but usually if you do something really outrageous, the courts notice. Then comes political competitiveness. And as you stated, Senator Roebling, there are some districts you simply cannot make politically competitive because there are just too many Democrats or too many Republicans living in that area. And so this criteria would mostly be about districts that if drawn with some appreciation for competitiveness. You literally have a district that is, you're not biasing it toward either Democrats or Republicans unfairly. And there has not been that much court activity around this political competitiveness issue. It is really something that has come into the forefront in the last decade or two. But I think the more plans that are drawn, the more we will all start to understand how that can and should work. Then the last criteria is incumbency. You should not draw districts for the purpose of either protecting or defeating incumbents. And so, again, the way this is designed is all of these factors are in play. Higher priority ones are first, listed first. Lesser priority ones are listed later. And as you can tell, the ones that are less scientific tend to be later because you can figure out population. You can figure out continuity and compactness. There are actual mathematical measurements of compactness. Because you can count the number of minorities or they're in the census, you have a pretty good sense of whether you're packing or fracturing those. Political subdivisions is real easy to look at. You know what the boundaries are, and you look at the splits. You just look at the number of districts that split borders. And then you get down to the last two there, or the last two of three, communities of interest and political competitiveness, which are a little less scientific. But when you do something very outrageous, people notice. So, Madam Chair, I hope that's responsive, Senator Roebling.
Senator Roebling, further questions?
Well, I'm trying to figure out the fairness of the whole plan. And one thing I have to observe is that by putting minority representation as a priority, communities of interest as a priority, and then knowing that some districts simply can't be competitive because there's a core that is surrounded by a lot of the same party or say, typical party affiliation. I'm thinking minority representation. Most of us in reality know that many of the minority members are Democrats. The Iron Range, if we keep a community of interest together, they vote for the Democrats. If some areas can't be politically competitive because there's a core, it will benefit the Democrats. So sitting here as a Republican, well, tell me why I should support this.
there's a Lake Minnetonka community of interest. There's a Red Lake Falls community of interest. Those would be in Republican areas. So it works all ways. And the criteria through 8, before political competitiveness, those are all criteria that have been used by the courts and by Minnesota for its 3 or 4 redistricting since the 60s. So those are well understood, well accepted, non-political or non-partisan. Everything's political, but they're non-partisan criteria that are well understood by all observers of whichever political persuasion they are.
And the
courts, regardless of whether they're dominated by Republican judges or Democratic judges, have all used those first criteria. The new one, or the relatively new one, is this political competitiveness one. And that's the one that the commission, the Redistricting Reform Commission, is trying to interject into Minnesota's thinking that we have not used in the past. But the others are all been used in Minnesota, regardless if it was Democrats or Republicans drawing the maps.
So, Senator Pogemiller, what this bill does, particularly with the A3 amendment, is to put into statute the principles that have been guiding essentially the courts, except for the 1992 redistricting that ended up being done by the legislature because of a failed veto.
The court did a map that year, though, and they used these type of criteria.
But the law that was passed
was the legislature
because of a failed veto. But even that one by the legislature followed these guidelines, and then the 2002 court-drawn maps followed these guidelines. And what's different here, as I understand it, is that these guidelines are being put into statute.
Correct.
And they're not in statute. They're not in statute in this form currently.
Correct.
And are there any guidelines in the statutes with regard to how the lines are to be drawn?
No.
There's nothing. And so this is putting into statute what the courts have used and what has been decided in case law.
Yes.
To establish these things.
And I've been personally involved in two redistrictings. Mr. Watson, I think, is four. And in each of those instances, the legislature adopted, prior to drawing their maps, criteria like these. And I have a copy of the conference committee work that the House and the Senate were doing when the Senate was Democrat and the House was Republican. And we came very close to adopting these criteria. And ultimately, there was a decision, and we can pass this out. Ultimately, there was a decision. I think Representative Paulson would agree with this. There was a decision that probably we were not going to agree to do a map as the House and the Senate. Therefore, this ultimately was not put into law. But I don't think it was because there was a disagreement over the criteria. It was because I think there was a general feeling that we may not be able to come to an agreement between the House and the Senate, therefore you might as well let the courts do it.
The court did.
And then there's a copy of what the court actually did in that year, and it looks very much like this. So the disagreements have really not been over the criteria. Although I believe the House Republicans that year wanted to go to a much smaller deviation, I believe they were asking for a 1% deviation rather than a 2% deviation on either side. And as the person negotiating, I was for the 2%, but that's not what held this all up. We could have come to agreement because the maps all get drawn closer to 1% anyway.
Senator Pogamiller, would you review the process and discussion about adding political competitiveness, and why was that not done before?
I think I'm a little bit of a disadvantage at this because I was not on the commission, and this is the criteria that the commission wants to instill here. But I believe the reason legislators didn't do it, is because it almost seems like an interjection of politics into the situation rather than a taking politics out of the situation. If you're trying to draw a district to be competitive politically, there's some sense that you would be breaking up safe districts to make them competitive. And so I just think the thinking around redistricting and the overly partisan nature of politics in the United States right now has led to outside groups thinking that we should try to get rid of these hyper-partisan districts and try to get more politically competitive districts. And I can, we all know on the congressional level, what is it, 40 seats nationally or something that are in play? Most of them are so Democrat or so Republican that they really don't change hands that often. And so I think most people who are looking at this believe that this political competition aspect is really in a reaction to what's going on at the federal level, not so much legislative level.
And I believe also, Senator Roebling, and I know that you weren't able to be at that informational hearing that we had, but the members of the commission talked about the tension between having a district that's politically competitive and one that respects a community of interest. And it was my understanding that they weren't trying to draw districts that would be every single one of them to be politically competitive. And what came to my mind is if you put a dot or a point in the city of Minneapolis and then you drew a big circle and made all the districts like a piece of pie, that you might get more politically competitive districts, but you would not be respecting communities of interest. And so there is that tension between those two criteria. And right now, I would think in the Senate, our Senate, there might be half a dozen to maybe 8 or 9 districts that have changed hands. And what this criterion could do was maybe raise that to a dozen, or maybe if it's 4, it would raise it to 8, and that would be a good thing for the Senate and for the House, not to have a primary always be the deciding factor in a number of districts where community of interest just trumps political competitiveness all the time.
Well, but Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
And I wasn't even thinking as much about legislative races as congressional, because, you know, putting in the court criteria, I guess, looking at the minority representation in the communities of interest area, I mean, it's probably we won't have too many Representative Colin Peterson districts that run down the whole side of the state, which is probably fairly politically competitive. It just depends on, I mean, Peterson just happens to appeal to that group, but there's a number of Republican areas and Democratic areas in that district, I know. But, you know, we're protecting a couple of districts immediately, or a couple of areas immediately, when, you know, like Oberstar's district would be protected by a community of interest in a lot of ways if we agree to keep the range together. And Keith Ellison's district would be protected if we agree that we can't split up the minority population. So, you know, I'm just looking at it from that perspective by having these already used criteria, and I agree they have been used by the courts in the past. We are already kind of singling out a couple of areas of state that will probably always have the same party representing it. So I have, but maybe political competitiveness then is a good thing, because then they would have to try and trot. But if these other ones take priority over that, then we still end up with that coming in a distant third and not being able to split the other ones up.
Well, Senator Pogamiller?
I would say the Iron Range by itself does not make a congressional district anymore. And so to split it up, I think most courts would view as kind of a violation of a community of interest. Whether you put a district across, I mean, think of it this way. Let's say the next redistricting would go down to 7 seats, potentially. Mm-hmm. Here will be a debate. Do you try to have as pure of an agricultural district as you can and keep Cullen Peterson's district out of the Arrowhead, because that's not really agricultural? Or some will argue, let's just have a Minnesota northern district and draw a northern district and just say the community of interest is northern Minnesota rather than agricultural. Neither of those takes precedent over the other. It gets down to what do people think? You can never totally take kind of politics out of this. Even judges sitting there would have to choose. Do I want a totally northern district, or do I want an agricultural district? Let's take Minneapolis and St. Paul. Someone might say, well, why don't we try to create a majority-minority district? That means you should put Minneapolis and St. Paul together and take some of the suburbs out. What you would do then is look at the numbers. Can you get there or can't you get there? And then you have a debate of what is the community of interest. Is the community of interest of, are Minneapolis and St. Paul so alike that you should put all minorities in one district? Or historically, are Minneapolis and St. Paul so different that it's a violation of community interest to put them together? And those are questions that there's no perfect answer, but get raised every redistricting. People talk about those, and presumably over time, the way people view communities of interest changes. And from the legislature's point of view, by putting this outside the legislature and allowing a panel of so-called non-self-interested people in charge, the argument is you'll get a fairer discussion of those countervailing issues. I think it's pretty clear that if you had a Democratic legislature drawing the map, it would not put Minneapolis and St. Paul together. Someone else,
right,
an independent group, might or might not. Don't know how they think about that.
And, I think, too, with the five judges, two would be chosen by Republicans, two by Democrats, and then the fifth one would be chosen by the other four. So there is a real attempt to recognize the partisanship-ness of it, but also to rise above it. Any other questions for Senator Pogomiller? And I also have an amendment that I want to offer, but we'll take additional questions before I do that. Senator Day.
Madam Chair, just because we're kind of shooting the breeze here a little bit and everybody's kind of throwing in their 2 cents on all of these things. I think it, like the last redistricting actually was very fair. I mean, I'm one that knows because, I mean, I was only, one lady burnt 25 ballots, or we maybe would have won that one. But I was only a couple away from being the majority in 2002. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty evenly divided across the state. And I maintain there's things that happen. There was a Wellstone talk that year, which kind of helped us a little bit. I think in the last time around, I think the Iraq War and anti-Bush carried, a lot of people, that extra 4-6% carried them in. That's kind of how politics is. I mean, it goes up in some years. There's waves that kind of go up and down, and I think that sometimes it's very difficult to, out in the congressional districts, I don't know. I think they're relatively fairly balanced. We're as a minority, we need to do a little better job in the inner cities. We understand that, the minorities all pretty much, vote 90-95% for DFL. So we probably just have to do a better job getting in there to rummage around and try and convince these people that they haven't gained anything by doing that for 50 years. But we're having a hard time telling them that. They don't seem to listen to us very well. So I look at it as just a guy that likes politics and being in it, that, depending on the wave of what's kind of happening and where you're at, the last plan wasn't all too bad. As we know, the first plan, the governor, I think, didn't sign it or something, or didn't veto it, or what was the deal with Carlson?
Botched the veto.
He did something.
Too many days for the veto.
Okay, so he didn't. So that was a plan that was a little bit shakier, really. But
on the other hand, the Democrats
lost the
did
majority.
That plan, and by the end of the decade, the Democrats were in pretty bad shape in the House, and a significant majority by the Republicans that lasted for 10 years.
Madam Chair, your suggestion, we should let you do that again then, maybe.
that wasn't it, no.
Anyway, so it's a tough.
The legislature, does have a role in this. I mean, they offer a plan, and we say yes or no, rather than digging around with it.
And I can honestly tell you that, let me think now, Mondale, Moe, or those other names that you mentioned. I have a little, Madam Chair, I think I have about as much faith in us as I think I did on that group that you had mentioned there.
Arnie Carlson.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I would take my chances with you, Senator Pogemiller, as well as with that group. So I mean, you know, I want
Chair, there is an irony here because I'm actually getting criticized. Why Senator Pogemiller, would you carry a bill like this when it's real clear that the DFL is on the ascendancy in the legislature right now? Why would you put a bill like this into law now? And, you know, hold on, Senator Day. But because I think it's the right thing to do, because there'll be another decade where the DFL is not in the ascendancy. And in the end, having been participant in drawing these maps, there's way too much effort put into what people believe is partisan map drawing than really takes place. Because in the end, these criteria drive things a lot more than people think. Just the equal population thing by itself and keeping cities and counties and school towns together by itself, those two criteria by themselves kind of draw the map for you. Now, you can do things around the edges, but as Senator Rest pointed out, apparently we did such a good job around the edges that we lost the House majority in that one decade. So politics changes. Communities are much more independent than we think they are. And in the end, having good districts is really trying to come up with some kind of neutral criteria that allows community of interest to be together is really the best thing for the democracy.
Any other questions? And then I have my amendment. Senator Roblin.
I'm wondering now, so this panel of judges would draw and submit a plan that could be rejected by the legislature twice. And the third time it would go back for one more round. But if that plan were rejected, then the legislature would draw its own plan.
Yes.
Or
amend the court's plan.
Okay. And now suppose one party had a supermajority and didn't feel that the plan that was coming out from the judges was giving them the edge that they would like. They could reject all those plans.
Absolutely.
And just keep doing that until they could draw their own plan.
I think it would be noticed.
That's true. It probably
I think
would
it would be noticed.
I think, Senator Roebling, it also would be noticed who was voting against it if, for example, there were incumbents who were paired. If only those incumbents were voting no, it would be very obvious that protection of incumbency was maybe more important to them than any other of the criteria.
Well, Madam Chair, just to go back to the way we did it last time, which I agree with Senator Day, it probably turned out pretty fairly, we couldn't agree in the legislature, so it went to the courts, and we didn't have final approval on it, right? The courts actually ended up with final approval, not the legislature. So the legislature did not vote on the final plan.
Correct, but I believe the legislature did adopt the court plan at one point, ultimately. Or did we not?
Not this plan.
We did not. We have not adopted this plan.
The plan that went into place was put there by the courts, period.
And Senator Roebling, it's not that the legislature couldn't put a plan together last time. I think there was, I don't think Representative Paulson would disagree with this. There was a decision made by the Republicans not to do a legislative plan and allow the courts to do it. And I think, and I think this could happen the other way, I think the court panel that drew the plan was appointed by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. The Chief Justice of the Supreme Court was a Republican. And I presume the calculation was they would probably do okay under that. I believe Democrats would have made that same calculation had it been their opportunity to do that.
So I think what's important in redistricting is for people to not just think about the circumstance they're in today, but to think about what the circumstances could potentially be at other times, and then try to balance what you think is fair and what isn't fair.
Madam Chair?
I'm going to offer the, what is it, the A?
Five.
Five amendment at this point, if I may, Senator Lurie.
Yes, Senator Rust has the A5 amendment. Do we have that?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Pogemiller members, one of the items that Senator Pogemiller brought up was the possibility that we're only going to have 7 congressional districts, and so I changed that in the course of the bill in 2 places to just, instead of saying 8 districts, deleting that and just inserting the number of districts apportioned to the state by the United States, and then making a change in his amendment where he talks about the 8th congressional district would be in the northeast corner of the state, and just saying that would be the district with the highest number. And then paying a bit more attention to some of the guidelines that we come up with in this committee on the appointment, which is to, what it does essentially is to delete subdivision 1, the creation of the commission, and to insert there that the leaders, it's not that the commission is created, it's that the legislative leaders need to make those appointments so that they're made in a timely fashion for the commission to do their work. The composition of the commission remains the same, except that the legislative leaders are required to consult with one another prior to making their appointments with the goal of attaining a geographic balance in the appointments. Now, it may be the case that, or what we wouldn't want, it seems to me, is 5 judges coming out of Hennepin County, if we could avoid that. And we would certainly want to urge the legislative leaders to do something other than that, even though they wouldn't be prescribed from doing that. And then that, what if we want this group to get going, so what if a legislative leader, even though it would be probably a remote chance, but if someone refused to make their appointment, the vacancy would be filled by the Chief Justice by the end of the first week of that year. And then it is follows exactly what Senator Pogemiller has, that to choose the 5th judge by a vote of 3 judges, and then they select one of their number to serve as chair of the commission. Mr. Watson rewrote that paragraph rather than doing a page and line within it. So there's not too much that's changed, except that a requirement of when the legislative leaders need to make the appointments, that they should consider geographic balance, and that if the appointing authority fails to make an appointment, it would by default go to the Supreme Court Chief Justice. And then the possibility in terms of the submission of the plans, that if the, let's say, the commission couldn't get their act together and every time they went to vote on a plan it was 3-2 to defeat a plan, that the legislature wouldn't have to wait until the legislature could act on its own following the second deadline if this commission did not submit a plan, and they wouldn't have to wait for them to submit a plan to act. So I think it's a kind of a fail-safe thing for what if the commission is ends up being ends up being indecisive about proposing a plan that the legislature gets gets to have its day in court earlier. So that's my amendment. Senator Pogemiller?
Senator Pogemiller?
I support the amendments. Well, it's good. It gets to some details, I think, that were kind of loose ends. And I think it's a good amendment. I don't like the negativity, though, of taking out eight.
Well, it's making it neutral. Nine. It's not saying seven, Mr.
It'd be
Chairman.
Nine.
Oh, it
Senator
could be
Paul.
Nine. Okay, I guess.
Okay, it could
oh,
be
so
nine.
You're actually doing it from the positive perspective.
Right, could be nine.
Any other questions of members? Seeing none, Senator Rust moves the A5 amendment. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Madam Chair.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, Senator Pogemiller, I apologize. I was late, and I had a question about your A3 amendment, which I assume was adopted. In there, you're deleting the once per decade. Is that because of policy, or is that because of the fact the legislature can ignore that anyway?
Neither.
Senator Pogemiller, he's referring to
deleting the once per decade.
To the deletion of the last subdivision concerning concerning that you didn't allow for any technical corrections following the adoption of the plan.
Mr. Watson, maybe.
Yeah, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm. The summary of the amendment explains that it's really for two reasons. One, Minnesota's constitution prevents the legislature from doing it more than once. And as far as the need to perhaps make technical amendments, the legislature has done that in both 83 and in 94 and 97. And I think, was it just last year we did one? At any rate, there have been a need to make some technical changes. And so to cut those off completely would not be prudent.
I knew there was a good reason.
Is there further discussion by the members? Senator Larson? Senator Larson moves that Senate File 2211, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Rules Committee. Is there anyone in the audience before we take that vote that wishes to testify either in support or in opposition to Senate File 2211? If you'd come forward, please. If you would state your name for the record.
Certainly. My name is Carol Veldman-Rudy, and I am from Fairvote, Minnesota. And I believe I presented some written testimony that you have before you.
You can have a seat.
And I was told I had to sign in. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my testimony was prepared before hearing the amendments that were just offered, but I discover that I think the things and ideas that are presented in my testimony have bearing on some of the issues that I have been hearing you discuss. For one thing, the whole issue of competition. First of all, to clarify what I am testifying about, my written testimony indicates that. Specifically to the issue presented in 2211 that each Senate district is entitled to one senator and each House district entitled to elect one representative. And then my testimony further comments on the concept of political competition, which was introduced into this particular bill as a new item from some previous bills that have been heard here before. My testimony describes what it is we mean by competition. Competition sometimes sounds like a dirty word, but when you think about competition vis-a-vis elections, it should not be a dirty word. It should be the kind of concept that I try to describe on page one of my testimony. In other words, political competition in elections means that there's sufficient breadth of electable choices available to the voters, that all voters across the state are equally empowered, and their single vote represents a vote, a single vote. Under some systems, swing districts, and currently our current system as well, swing district voters are more empowered than our districts that do that are safe districts. The third point to make about competition and the concept of competition, there need to be a high number of effective votes that are cast. And by effective votes, we don't just mean people going to the ballot box and being able to drop in their vote. We mean people who are genuinely capable of electing somebody to represent them with their vote. And finally, by competition, political electoral process competition is meant a high degree of accountability between the citizenry and elected representatives. I'm making these points because so much of this has been already researched and studied by various people around the country and even internationally, so that some of these points about political electoral system competition are known and researched to be important. And I make that statement under the section called Issues. It's a worthy criteria for election systems to think about competition in the ways that I have just described. I have with me the only study that I know of regarding representative and representative districts in the United States, and that study was conducted in the state of Illinois. At one point, Illinois had 3-member districts for its House of Representatives. I have the study here, and I have its email address listed in my testimony under references. They had 3-member House of Representative districts elected under a method called cumulative voting. They dropped that method in the early 80s and issued a commission in 2000, chartered a commission in 2000 to investigate the effect of single-member small districts as opposed to the large 3-member districts that they had once had. The data that they collected is available on the web in their report. I have the executive summary here. And their data confirms that in a multi-member large district, most of the good things that Senator Pogemiller's amendment introduced happen, and that all of the bad things, things like voter empowerment, the number of voters that go to the polls to elect their single representative, the amount of participation that happens, and above all, the variety of political and public discussion and so forth, all of those go down with a single-member small district, as opposed to the large districts that Illinois once had. You can see the data for yourself if you are interested in it. But that, as far as I know, is the only material, the only study that has been done on this question of how to get competition in the way that I have defined it in my testimony, how to get true electoral competition into the system. Now, our current system actually is very predictable. Our current system, Fair Vote Minnesota, has for 3 elections issued its no contest election report. And in every one of those elections, 2000, 2002, and 2004, we were able to predict, based on the population of party membership in the various districts, we were able to predict outcomes before anybody knew who was running how much money was coming into the district or what the issues were. And in 2004, our predictions were about 90% successful, accurate. And I have included the summary of that final, of that 2004 piece in the materials that I presented to you in my packet. So our current system is not, in fact, very competitive at all. And if you look at the map, you can see for yourself the number of swing districts, very, very few. Now, there's a better way, I would submit to you. There's a better way to get to what Senator Pogemiller's amendment desires, and that includes competitiveness. There's a better way. In the first place, as he already has said, the size of the district really does matter. The larger the district, the easier it is to introduce all of the good things that the courts have mandated and that we know to be true about political and electoral system competition. I say that on page 2 of my testimony, that the size of the district really does matter. Unless one is going to begin to gerrymander small districts, the size really does matter. And so based on our knowledge of that, we would advocate that you in your deliberations seriously consider creating larger districts rather than maintaining the small ones that we currently have. But it's not just the size that matters. It's also the number of representatives coming from a given district that matters. Because if you have three representatives per district, you have the opportunity to create some of that public conversation and public meeting of the minds that is so needed in order to create adequate representation on the part of citizens. So my second point under on the second page of my testimony indicates, again, based on the Illinois Assembly's commission, that the number of representatives per district really does matter. When they went to single-member small districts, there was a drop, a precipitable drop in voter participation, in competitiveness, in the ability of voters to make their desires known and to actually cast effective votes. And finally, my third point, it's not just a big district with three representatives. It's also how you vote. The voting system makes a difference. And Fair Vote Minnesota is on record for supporting ranked choice voting in this regard. Ranked choice voting would allow voters to adequately represent their political desires and translate those desires into effective votes that would actually elect people to the House of Representatives. One interesting thing that the Illinois data demonstrated was that even though competition in the multi-member districts, even though the competition there was about the House of Representatives, in the years in which they had those districts, even the Senate races were more competitive. And so the advantages of this kind of a system, I think, would help Minnesota realize the good things that Senator Pogemiller has put before you in terms of what's needed in this particular redistricting plan. I've included in my packet of testimony the evaluation of election systems that Illinois did produce in their materials. They evaluated four systems. And that's the final page, I believe, of your packet of testimony, on a variety of categories. Three of those categories fall into the definition of competition that I described for you in my testimony. The single-member district plurality voting, which is our current system, as you can see by the rating scale, uniformly on all of those significant items fails. Instant runoff voting, which is designed for single-member districts, doesn't show very well either with regard to legislative districts. It is when you get to the proportional methods of electing representatives that you actually get some good benefits from a large district with multi-members. And so Fair Vote Minnesota and I myself would like to recommend that you not specify in Senate File 2211 the number of representatives and senators, or that you indicate that that has to that we have to continue with our current political map with regard to districts, but that you omit that kind of language in the bill, and that you promote, in fact, a conversation about what would actually create a fair and a just election system that would translate voters' votes into genuine representation on the House and Senate level. Madam Chairman, that concludes my remarks.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony, Senator Day.
Madam Chair, and I'm glad you're up here from Faribault.
I'm not from Faribault. I'm from Fair Vote.
Oh, Fair Vote. I'm
I love Fair Vote.
Son of a gun. Okay, I feel better now.
Oh, good.
I feel better now because I was just going to say I got to tackle one of my own people, and I didn't know like that. Okay. No.
Yeah. Tackle away.
What you did in 2004 was fine. The problem is that if you go to 2006, you will find that there were six Republicans, four of them in pretty strong Republican seats that got beat. There were two strong Democrats that we actually took out. This whole thing in 2006 would have been topsy-turvy. I know 2004, because when you get to a presidential election, there's some things that happen, and I know that people always say politics is local, 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 but as I'm getting a little older, I'm finding out there's some other things that happen. And there are kind of, as the mood of things move, they really change. So a 2004 election, I think you're probably pretty accurate. Everybody stayed quite the same. Also in 2002 was a pretty topsy-turvy year because I was involved in that one. And it was there were a lot of people moved. In fact, around here, people used to talk about term limits, and I always chuckle about it because, granted, I've been here a while, but there's only a few of us left, maybe about 10. There's a couple around sitting here, but there isn't many of us out of 67 senators. We have quite a turnover. So I don't know if I agree with your idea that that your analysis is accurate. I think actually the system that's in play right now makes it very, very competitive. We went from a Republican House to a Democrat House, and that would tell me that was, and there was a big margin. I mean, we're talking losing 19 seats in 1 year. I believe they lost 19 seats in 2006. So I don't know. I'm glad Illinois has got their act together. Of course, they had Mayor Daley and then Governor Ryan, which... pretty two notorious type figures in Illinois politics. But anyway, I appreciate, you know, what you're what you're expressing to us. I just don't know if I come up with the same conclusions, but that's beside the point.
Could I respond to that, Madam Chair?
Yeah, very briefly, and then we need to move to a vote.
Of course. In comment on these particular numbers, it's been known for quite some time in the world of research and scholarship that voting trends do not change much. And so it is possible to look at the number of party members within a district, and if there is the calls we were able to make on districts were made in terms of a 3% difference between party between party numbers. And that is a fairly predictable thing, surprisingly. In fact, it's so predictable that the biggest news that happened in the last election, as I recall, was the fact that Edina changed parties. And that's fairly big news because typically a given geographical region does not change over time very much at all. And whenever there's a 3% or larger difference in the in the party membership in a particular district, you can pretty well predict where that district will come. Just a clarification of the numbers.
Is there further discussion? Senator Pogemiller had an appointment that he could not break. Family responsibility. So I'm an author on the bill, so I'm here in his stead at this point. Senator Larson.
I would renew my motion, Madam Chair.
Is there anyone else that wanted to speak, either in favor or in opposition to the bill? Okay, Senator Larson renews his motion that Senate File 2211, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Rules. Although may be in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
The motion prevails. Thank you very much, members. Senator Larson.
They're not. No one.
Senator Larson has Senate File 457. Senator Larson, do you have any amendments?
Yes, Madam Chair, the A1 amendment.
The A1 amendment. This is an author's amendment.
It is
Senator
an author's
Larson
amendment.
Moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor? Please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Senator Larson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 457 would take the Bloomington School District's school board and create four equal single member election districts by which there would be a board member from each of those districts. And then there would be three at-large board members. Mm-hmm. Currently, the Bloomington School Board is the same number, seven, but they are all elected at large. So Subdivision 1 would require the school district to make that change. Subdivision 2 would, of course, goes to making the districts equal per population as practicable, composed of compact and contiguous territory, and using the federal census data to determine the districts. The board elections are specified in Subdivision 3 in terms of how to make that transition work in terms of moving from an all-at-large board to a district and a at-large board. And the Section 2 is the local approval clause, which, again, requires the school district to make the change. However, if the school district does not make the change by July 1st, 2010, then the governing body would submit the question to the voters of the school district in the 2010 general election to ask the voters if they would approve or disapprove of the school district moving to district boundaries as are spelled out in this legislation. What the A1 amendment did is it clarified that either if the board acted in favor of this or if, in fact, the issue went to the voters and the voters approved it, that the earliest election that the law would require them to have this take effect would be in 2013. And so it's out some ways for transition purposes and also for purposes of providing for the debate that would move forward. The first question that comes to mind is what problem are we trying to solve or am I trying to solve with this legislation? Members, the first thing that I want to say is that in no way does this legislation in any way relate to personalities or the performance of current board members? I have nothing but the highest regard for members of the Bloomington Board. The reality is our city is quite large and growing more diverse. And you'll also see that over time, to no fault of the members of the school board, there's a map that's been distributed that shows that essentially six of the seven board members live in the same section of the city. And again, that's to no fault of the school board members. However, as we're looking forward to the future of how we govern our schools in Bloomington, the third largest city in the metropolitan area, it has been my impression and the feedback that I have gotten from my constituents that we have, in fact, a system that provides for additional representation from specific areas, at least to guarantee that there's someone to go to, if you will, when you're asked the question, who's your school board member?
What is the number of your legislative district?
I'm 63B.
You're 63.
Yes, I'm the North Central and Eastern. I'm sorry.
You're 63.
I'm Senator Betzel has got it. I'm Senate District 63, yes.
Oh, okay. But it's the portion of 63B
that
is in the Bloomington School
District. I was living in the past there a little bit, Senator Betzel. I'm sorry. Thank you for bringing me fast forward.
You were responsive to my question.
Okay. But it is the portion of 63B that's on the map.
Okay.
Now, in 1976, in the city of Bloomington, the Bloomington city decided to go from a at-large process of electing their city council to a ward system. And just to demonstrate for you that, and I wish I had the council districts overlaid on the map, that this does not bring radical change to the Bloomington School District, is that if you laid the current wards, the four wards that are currently in place for the city council over the top of that map, you would only find one of those council districts without a school board member in it, and that would be the northeast corner, the north central and east corner of the city. Nonetheless, it is as we move to be a more diverse community with when you're a city as large as you are, and as we are in Bloomington, we have many vast differences within our community, and I'm bringing this forward today because I believe in the future this will be beneficial to our school districts, to our school district, to our students, and to our community. And so it's with that that I offer this legislation, ask for your support. There are school board members here that I know wish to testify. I know that three had signed up, and there is a fourth school board member. Madam Chair, at your desire, if you would, I'd be happy to move to the table and have everyone come up at the
Senator
same
Larson,
time.
I think that'd be a good idea, and maybe we could bring an extra chair up and invite all four to come.
Very good.
And then we'll hear from them in turn.
Madam Chair?
Senator Marty?
While they're coming up, Senator Larson, I just had a question about their precinct number. I can see the four wards, but precinct number is 31 next to 4 and 3. And how did they come up with these precinct numbers?
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Marty, that's a good question for the Bloomington City Clerk, and I don't have the answer on how they actually geographically get to those numbers. However, I'll tell you that over the years that I have been involved in public service in Bloomington, while those numbers don't always stay the same, they stay generally in the same geographic area. And so there's a rhyme to the reason, but I'm not sure what that is.
Just 1, 2, 3,
so,
4.
So thank you, Senator Larson. If your witnesses would
thank
approach
you.
The table, and if you'd put up a fourth chair, are the pages doing that? Thank you, Ms. Sands. So welcome to the committee, and if at some point you would sign the witness list, but who would like to begin? And if you would identify yourself, please, for the record.
Certainly, Madam Chair, Senators. My name is James Sorum. I am one of seven members of the school board in Bloomington.
that this bill is directed to. And I speak only for myself, not as a board, and I'm here today to speak in support of this legislation. Senator Larson, I shared with you some of the background and details of the bill, and I want to share my perspective of why we need to ensure adequate representation of all citizens to our elected body, similar to the principle used for a legislature, city council, and county board. Simply stated, school boards are elected on a nonpartisan basis to act on behalf of and with extensive participation by the community to establish a structure designed to ensure that all learners have the opportunity to achieve and also to be accountable to all citizens for the management of the fiscal resources. Now, having said that, historically, school boards have been elected at large, and usually in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, school districts were kind of matched within city boundaries, and so whenever it didn't create a problem, 5, 6, or 7 of the most popular and the most involved citizens in the educational community were usually elected to that board. Fewer schools and fewer issues. However, then came sprawl, cities grew and expanded, and new cities cropped up, and diversity became a significant factor, and our school districts were no longer homogeneous or contiguous with city boundaries. Now, I mention that because it's created some geographic concerns where certain areas aren't feeling that they're represented on the board. Bloomington, the fifth largest city in the state, has become much diversified, and by 2015, we almost anticipate 40% diversity in Bloomington. This suggests that a different election model should be used to provide better representation to our school board and make sure all the voices are heard. Senator Larson talked a little bit about the school, the city council, and its ward arrangement, and that has worked out very well. And the school board could use the same boundaries for representation without any additional cost to the city or to the school district. You all may know of some other districts who are operating under this arrangement, and there are others where discussion is in place. Now, one of the questions that's being asked is, why does the legislature need to be involved, and is it a good idea? Why haven't we done it already? Well, I guess this issue has been brought up many times before at the school district, and before it has gotten there, it's usually been rejected or turned down. So, as you can see from the maps, there are 6 members represented in 2 of the 4 precincts or 4 districts, and only 1 in the other ones. This proportion has been this way for quite a while, and it's gotten to the point where people in certain parts of the city wonder who their representative is and why they don't necessarily have a school board. Our recent school board elections in 2007, for instance, we had 3 positions, an uncontested election. Nobody ran against the 3 incumbents. In a 2005 election, there were 5 candidates for 4 positions, 3 incumbents and 2 challengers. But in the 2003 election, there were 8 candidates for 3 positions. And this was compounded by a referendum issue. And you can imagine there were some of the candidates were opposed to the referendum.
Madam Chair.
Senator Day, did you have a question for the school board member?
First off, you got a great city and a great state senator. Do we do this? I mean, do they have to come here or not? Mm-hmm. Or can they do this on their own school board?
No, they can't.
Senator Day, Madam Chair, Senator Day, school board can do this on its own, absolutely.
Oh, I didn't know that.
In fact, the legislation that I bring to you has the local approval clause that within that they could make that determination on their own. And, in fact, that's why we build in the local approval here that we essentially provide a period of time for the discussion to occur, from which, if they don't make that discussion, that's where we're directing that then the question would go to the voters to make that decision.
So it's that requirement, Senator Larson, that would bring the bill to the legislature rather than the school district making a decision on its own.
That's correct, Madam Chair, and without being too good a prognosticator, I think it's fair to say, as Board Member Sorum has testified, that currently the proposal would not pass at the school board. This sort of requires the discussion. It doesn't require them to enact it, but it says that if they don't enact it, then it goes to the voters.
Mr. Sorum.
Thank you. I could share many stories of my 15 years of being on a school board representing one of the 2 districts in the other side. And but just suffice it to say that as hard as we try and communicate with everybody in general, many people want to meet and talk to a representative personally in their own neighborhood, where they live, where they shop, where they socialize, and where they worship. And while our main goal is to do what is right for all kids in the district, regardless of where they live or what school they go to, we are also accountable to 65% of the people in our district who don't have children in school but also support our programs and don't want to see their taxes spent unwisely but who also need a voice. Some opponents might say, well, leave things alone. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I guess I subscribe to the theory that let's improve it so that it doesn't break. You can all understand that. Others might ask, if no one's qualified or someone doesn't run, how is there going to be representation? And we say if they have qualifications. Qualifications are minimum for a school board, and there will be people to step up when the time comes. Now, as far as issues of a single issue, special interest, or an anti-tax candidates, this new district approach would not stop a candidate from being elected, whatever the platform is, any more than the current system. However, it would lessen the chance that a slate of candidates running together to form a block of voters. For instance, in hypothetically in 2009, four seats are up for re-election. Under election of our current structure, an anti-referendum movement could slate, could campaign and win four seats, which would be a majority on the board. A new districting structure would prevent that. I just would like to say in closing that I believe the passage of this bill would make a Bloomington school district stronger, more responsive to its citizens, and respected more by its citizens. We have been proud of the leadership role we play in Minnesota education circles with our business partnerships and extra district, other district collaborations. We know we have to change the way we do business if we are to survive in our ever constantly changing and continually challenging state and nation. Our citizens, our schools, our parents, and students have helped make us one of the best districts in the state. But by opening up our election process to allow more participation and meaningful representation, we can maintain that leadership role. There is an old adage, if we always do what we always did, we will always get what we always got. And I'm sure you know how meaningful that is in your efforts as a legislative body. Status quo isn't an option. I think the time is right for change, and I know we can do better in Bloomington with your help. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sorum. Sir, if you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mark Hibbs, and I'm a parent of three students in the Bloomington Public Schools, and I am also a Bloomington School Board member, and I'm here to speak in opposition of this bill. Senator Larson and Representative Lencheski, who's authored the House Companion Bill, appeared before the Board of Education on February 25th, 2008, and while this legislation was introduced last session, this presentation on the 25th of February was really the first public discussion of this issue in the city of Bloomington, as far as I'm aware. Senator Larson has represented that we're a changing community, we're becoming more diverse. No one's arguing with that. But I don't believe there's any guarantee that this is the way to solve that problem. And I think there's a lot of things that should have been done before this came to the legislature. And I mentioned these things to both Senator Larson and Representative Lencheski. Representative Lencheski is famous in Bloomington for having town meetings, and I suggested to her that she ought to come have a town meeting on the value of public service. Certainly, there haven't been any concerted efforts to recruit people from those sections of the city. And lastly, perhaps we need term limits for the Bloomington Public School, the board members. As was noted, state law already affords the board this authority to create election districts. But at the February 25th board meeting, six of seven board members did not support this legislation because, as a school board and a school district, we're trying to create a sense of unity rather than one of division. The bottom line is this is a Bloomington issue, not a state issue. And legislation is not the answer, especially because there has been little to no community dialogue that would suggest that this is the best and most appropriate solution to some problem. And lastly, if you're compelled to think that this legislation is warranted for Bloomington, then it is surely warranted for many other districts in the state, and you should amend the bill as such. Thank you.
Thank you. Next. you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
Yes, Arlene Bush. Excuse me. I've been on the Bloomington Board for 26 years, so, and I believe so strongly that I am working for everybody in Bloomington, for all our students, all our schools, and really would not want to see a ward system for school board members. We work for all our schools, and the wards would not necessarily be the same as school boundaries. We've changed boundaries often. We've closed half our schools over the years. I got on the school board and a year later closed my daughter's high school. That was not because of living in a ward supporting it. I had six daughters go through the school, so I was an involved parent for 24 years, I guess. And I am always open to change. I don't think you can improve without changing things. And so I'm very supportive of that, if it's for something good. But I do not see how this would help our students and our schools. Because if we, the time comes again, we have to change boundaries, close another school, that does not follow ward lines. It's the whole district. And I would echo everything that Mark has said. But I just do not believe this would be best for our students and our citizens. So I hope, and again, I do not see how, with all the huge problems the legislature has to work with, that doing something like this to one school district, I don't understand. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, ma'am.
Thank you. My name is Maureen Bertolotta, and I'm the chair of the school board this year. I just want to point out a few things that haven't been said. As a school board, we have liaison schools, and each year we change, but each of us has two or three schools that we are liaisons with. So there is actually a school board member that a person in a neighborhood could go to if they had a problem with one of the schools. Another thing is, if you look at those maps, right now, if we had these districts, one district would have seven schools, one would have three, one would have four, and one would have one. So, you know, there's no equality there or fairness in that, I don't think. And I just want to remind people that school boards are not like city councils. They are more of a policy-making body rather than a local district-type group that you would go to if you had a problem with one of your schools. We're more of a policy, not that. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
I'm sorry. I'd just like to, excuse me, I'm having a tough time, add that talking about diversity in Bloomington, one of my schools that I attend this year is an elementary school in way west Bloomington, and they now have 30% diversity in their school. So it's not, the diversity isn't a matter of complete location either. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any questions for the witnesses at this point? Senator Roebling?
Well, I'm curious that we would have a partial ward, partial traditional school election system at large. Do any other districts currently have such a system? Because I'm wondering who would want to campaign in the whole district if they could just go for a single ward of the district. It would, there's no advantage. There's, you still have the same vote, one of seven, whether you're either. So I'm just wondering if anybody else has that system.
Senator Larson?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Roebling. I guess my answer to that would be, cities all across Minnesota elect city councils that way. We do in Bloomington and have since 76. It's a manner of providing some local neighborhood participation without providing so much power in those neighborhoods that one neighborhood could swing a debate or that policy is made with too much interest in one neighborhood. If one neighborhood really wanted to do one thing, there's those all other neighborhoods to protect against that parochialism. And so having the at-large seats is important rather than splitting the district into seven equal parts. I think there is a value in having those three at large. We have that in our city council, and we end up having candidates for all of those positions. And oftentimes there's more competition for those seats because there's more discussion within the neighborhoods as well.
Sure. Senator Roebling?
But there would be nothing to prohibit four members from being from one ward.
Correct.
Madam Chair and Senator Roebling, you're absolutely right. And that's why I want to make the point that this bill does not end up creating radical change. If this were enacted for the election of 2013 with the current school board that is elected, there would be only one member of the board in total that would be essentially in play. It is very possible that you could have the other six still serving under a new map. Now, depending on redistricting and how those boundaries will change with the next census, and of course we all are subject to that. And that's but what I really wanted to emphasize is that it's not about the people; it's about the system. I've had folks board member Hibbs has said people ought to go out and recruit people to run. The difficulty with that is it's really the system that needs change. It's not the individuals that are involved in the process. Now, I could go out and recruit some people to run for election, and they might win, they might lose. If they won, I guess when I quit recruiting, if someone else doesn't pick that up, our system somehow falls down in terms of that local representation. And so if we want the system to be better that way, it seems to me we have to adjust the system, however very minor it is. The other thing that I think is important for the committee to understand is that this is not in any way a partisan discussion. Mr. Sorum, who was the first testifier, has been in his life an active Republican. And in fact, he pointed out to the sergeant at arms in the Senate today that if he were in the Senate, he wouldn't vote like me. So.
All the time.
and it just so happens that one of the school board members that's not here today is a very active partisan Democrat, and he very much disagrees with my legislation. And one other point that I would want to make is that in terms of the community dialogue, we introduced this legislation very early in the last session. In fact, the school board chair and I had a conversation before the bill was submitted just to say we really want to have this conversation. And yet I don't think we're going to get to the point where we have the conversation. But we do have very unique differences as it relates to diversity. If you look just at overall in our community, we have in our elementary schools about 35% diversity among our elementary school students currently. In Valley View Elementary School, which you'd see in the northeastern corner of Bloomington, we have 80% diversity in that elementary school. So there are some real differences across the city. And again, that is just one of the things that I'd point out that there's a need. Last election, we had a referendum, two questions. And now, while you can't, it's difficult to determine from that election if the outcome trends reflect what it reflects. But what I can tell you as you look at that map is that east of 35W, which is essentially the half point in the city, no precinct voted in favor of those referendum questions. And so there's something going on there, and I'm not saying that it's all because people feel disconnected, but I do talk to a lot of people in my part of the part of the Bloomington that I represent that do feel disconnected. And so this is pretty moderate change in a system to just allow for a system that provides for representation that's slightly more spread across the city.
Are there any other questions for the witnesses? Senator Betzel, a question for the witnesses?
Well, an observation, because we were asked to, consider doing it for other school districts. I represent part of Anoka-Hennepin, which I believe is now the largest school district. They elect by 7 different districts. So it's not unprecedented. It is done. And an observation, I also represent the Moundsview School District, and we have and I don't know if this is analogous to what's in Bloomington, but they elect them at large, but it seems that there's a rich part of a district, if I can use that term, and a poor side. I've got the poor side, but all the school board members come out of the area that has North Oaks, and I question whether that's fair.
Well, thank you.
Could I just respond to that remark?
Mr. Hibbs?
That's certainly noted, and we know that there are many school districts in the state that span municipalities. Bloomington is fairly unique in that our school district is coterminous with our city boundary. And again, I just want to reiterate, I don't know how many of you might have been school board members in the past, but school boards set district policy. They don't really solve day-to-day site-specific problems. In the Bloomington schools, we have site councils, and that's their job. So just to reiterate, I think there's certainly an issue in Bloomington. No one here at the table would deny that. I just don't think this is the solution to the problem.
Any other questions for the witnesses? Well, thank you very much. We appreciate your being here. Senator Larson, if you want to go back to the table then.
Thank you. Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
I just want to comment that there is this little piece of savage that got into the Bloomington School District. So it's not all contiguous with Bloomington, because they took our grain terminals where there's no people living, but there's some good tax base right there that they were able to slice out at some point in time.
Well, do you want to do some little annexation kind of thing?
Yeah, maybe we should have an amendment to this bill and see if we can get that back.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Questions now for Senator Larson. Senator Marty, did you have anything? Yes. Anyone else wishes to speak on this bill in the audience? I think the whole audience has spoken on this bill, actually. Senator Larson, did you want to make some additional comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll have to check in with Senator Roebling. I think when I was moving from the chair to here, there was an annexation movement about.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you very much to the committee. I would move that Senate File 457 be recommended to pass.
As amended. And it has not been requested by any other committee.
As amended.
Senator Larson moves that Senate File 457 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. There being no further business before the committee, we stand adjourned.